From KRCB in Santa Rosa, it's Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour with Michelle Anna Jordan.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Visa, offering the Visa Signature Card, featuring concierge services for travel, dining, and entertainment at visasignature.com.
A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the wine country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. I'll be here with you for the next hour. And hey, Happy New Year. If January and the first part of February got off to a little bit of a bumpy start, you can always observe the Lunar New Year and restart everything. It's what I'm doing this year, that's for sure. So today, February 18th, is the first year of the Year of the Pig. Bacon all year long. And tonight, we have a full house tonight, and it's me and the boys. We have, starting on my left, Steve Levesque of Chalk Hill Winery. Thanks for taking time on a Sunday.
Great. It's great to be here.
Steve Lutzen of Lutzen Winery. Thank you for joining us.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you.
And I'm just going to blow this, but I'll do my best. Frane Franicevic?
That's right.
Cool. Of Sunset Winery, and Randy Pitts of Harvest Moon Winery.
Thanks for having us.
Really appreciate it. And what triggered our getting together is in March, we are having, or Sonoma County is having Barrel Tasting Month. And you're all participating. I'm starting with you, Steve. Why don't you tell us about what you're doing for Barrel Tasting, or tell us somebody, you all just jump in and tell us about Barrel Tasting Month.
No problem. I think it's a very special opportunity for people to come to visit Sonoma County and be able to go to several wineries that are offering this great opportunity. And it allows us as vintners to showcase wine straight out of barrel, which typically people are only going to taste wines once they've been bottled, and usually they're bottle aged for several months before they're released. So we invite people to come to the winery to get a great tour and to taste very special wines straight out of barrel.
Now, is this happening only on the week? Is it every weekend in March, or does it happen all month long?
I think it depends on the schedule of the winery, but it's all month. At Chalk Hill, it's Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. We have this special tour, which involves the barrel tasting, and then also Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m.
Mm-hmm. Now, if I remember correctly, barrel tasting did used to take place on a single weekend, right?
Mm-hmm, that's right. It used to be for many years, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of first weekend of March. But because the event became so popular, people are coming from all over the country for this particular occasion. It's understandable, since it is the biggest, it turned out to be the biggest event in the wine country and the most fun event in the wine country. Due to the traffic problems and crowding, the Russian River Wine Road decided to expand the event to two weekends. This will enable wineries to handle more people to have a little more in touch with the winemakers, more contact with the personnel at the winery, and be able to discuss and talk about the wines, which hasn't been the case in the past. So
yeah, in one weekend, you can't put it all into one weekend.
No, it's really hard. And I remember the first time I went to Barrel Weekend, gosh, I think it was 1990. And I remember going, if you can imagine this, I went to Dehlinger, and there was nobody there. Just Tom Dehlinger, two full-size barrels and a plank of wood. And he looked like really shocked and surprised.
What, to see somebody?
When we walked in, and we were all awkward, and I was really shy, and, you know, he poured some Pinot from a barrel. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
so there was nobody around. There's no one in the parking lot even.
Yeah, things have sure changed.
Yeah.
Well, it is a win-win situation because most of the wineries offer substantial discount. Anywhere from 20% to 40% off the retail price. So the customers, they recognize that, and they come to purchase wine at this time. And the wineries is good for the wineries because they are able to generate needed cash flow in the winter for operating capital. So it is definitely a win-win. Situation. Mm.
But not so jam-packed. I mean, it grew so much from whatever year it was started to where it was just insane.
It's a time of week, and you hold on for dear life and wait for it to be over. And Sunday, I can honestly say, I think most winemakers are so darn tired come Sunday night. You know, it's just, we get to spread it out and spend a little bit more time with people, which is kind of what it's all about. It's not just a great time to come out and taste some great wine and get a great discount, but very few people get the opportunity to go into the cellar, which is where the barrels are at, and hang out kind of with the winemaker and see kind of what goes on behind the scenes. And it's a great time to get some cash flow, but it's also a great time to taste some juicy fresh wine that's still in the barrel.
It also seems like spreading it out over a month, there's actually more of a focus on the wine itself rather than on, ooh, let's have a party. You know, because it seemed like a lot of places would have music, they'd have special foods. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really, how many wineries can you go to in a day and actually still be thinking about the wine?
8, 9, and people come in on 3 o'clock, 3:30, and it is it's full-on party.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it seems like it stretches it out, and people who are really interested in wine in various stages and winemaking, that sort of thing.
Exactly, and it's very exciting for most of people because it's a sort of a self challenge. If they were tasting particular wines, then they are faced with a choice of deciding whether to purchase it if they like it, and not knowing how this wine is going to develop and age, and so it's an educational process, and it's a challenge to choose the wines to purchase. It's almost like a gambling or betting on the future, but in this case you can't lose because you always get a wine. So
the ability to go, this wine tastes great right now, but in 8, 10 months, a year from now, the ability for it to progress in the barrels is even more cool.
Now, for Barrel Weekend, there's a char, I think it was, what, $40 to participate,
$10.
Oh, $10, okay.
It was free up to this year.
Uh-huh.
This is the first time that the charge is imposed, and that's basically, so it's very minimal, $10 per
$10,
person.
And the $10 covers what period of time?
$10 for one weekend.
For a weekend,
and
okay.
And next weekend you have to repurchase the glass.
Yeah, I think it's different for the different areas. I know Sonoma Valley, the barrel tasting for them is on the 17th and 18th, and it goes from 11 o'clock to 4, and the ticket for the whole weekend is $55.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a designated driver, it's only $20, mm-hmm. which is kind of cool. And then if it's just a ticket for Sunday, it's $40, and then the designated driver is only $10.
All the water you can drink, too.
It is. And at our winery, and the Sonoma Valley.
Which is your winery is Ledson.
Is Ledson, yes. Yeah. And in the Sonoma Valley, there's 19 wineries, and every one of us are pairing on those days food and wine.
Uh-huh.
And so you learn a lot about the pairing of the food and wine. You get to meet the winemakers, and I know for myself at the winemaker at Ledson, I really enjoy this day because you get to meet the people and they taste the wines out of your barrel, and you can chat with them and hear their comments, and it's an exciting weekend. With the barrel tasting being all these different areas of Russian River Appalachian, Sonoma Valley, I mean it's everywhere.
Chalk Hill.
Appalachian. you can pick an Appalachian a weekend. You know, you got four of them.
You could literally come here and stay for the month.
Uh-huh.
And have a great time. Have a buzz for the whole month.
There you go. Steve, since you're I want to talk about each of the individual wineries now. Let's start with you, Steve. Letson Winery. And I just have to say, for a long time, and I don't know the history, I only know my visual history of driving past the structure. And for so long, it appeared to be abandoned. And it looked like the most wonderful haunted house ever built. We used to call it the Spider Winery. You know, when nothing yet was there, I just loved it. You know, I wanted to go spend the night in the place all by myself on Halloween. So tell us a little bit about the history of the building.
Yeah, originally the taste room, which is 16,000 square foot, and now is called the Castle of all over the world. People hear about the castle in Kenwood. Originally was going to be my home, and I had built that house in 94. And my superintendent at that time said, you know, Steve, I'll work for you for nothing. And I says, how's that? What do you mean? He says, well, just let me put a stand up out on the highway, and I just want a piece of the wine. Just give me 10% of the wine sales. I said, are you serious? He says, think about it. There's so many people here every day asking, when's the winery going to open? When's the winery going to open? So I thought that was a great idea and decided that 16,000 square feet was a little bit too much for my wife and I to take care of. So we decided to go through the approvals, and it took us 4 years. In 1997, we opened with a double-wide trailer, and in July 13th of 1999, we opened the castle. And it has just grown to be incredible. I mean, we're doing about 50,000 cases of wine out of there now, 70 different lots. There's 35 different wines we're making. So it's been...
How many different wines?
35 different wines.
35 different wines. And do you grow all the grapes, or are you buying grapes as well as growing?
We buy and grow. Yes.
And tell us about the varietals.
Pretty much every varietal you can think of. I mean, I brought a couple today. I brought
Sangiovese.
That'd be great. We could open one of these Sangioveses from Nice Valley. Yeah. Yes. Go ahead and open that. But actually, I'll have this lovely lady you have in the background here.
Okay.
Once we can talk. But I think part of the fun for us at Ledson is having so many different lots, 70 different lots of wine, and all small lots. I mean, we make 50 cases up to maybe 1,000 cases of stuff. And so when it comes to the blending time, you have all these different options of different lots. I might make 25 different Zins or say Merlots or Cabs. And so we have all this blending for certain appellations that we can do together. And I think it gives us the opportunity to make much richer, more concentrated wines.
Mm-hmm. And to make 35 different varietals or so, how big is your winemaking team?
It's myself and an assistant and a cellar worker and then two other people that work.
So pretty small crew.
Yeah, it's some long hours.
Crush, yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably don't see much of you August through October.
That's for sure.
You are listening to Mouthful on KRCB Public Radio for Sonoma County.
We came out west together with a common desire. The people we had.
You are listening to Mouthful. There's one of my favorite sounds. What are we drinking, Steve?
Little Nice Valley Sangiovese. Up in the hills in the Nice Valley at about 1,500 feet Appalachian.
Oh, Nice Valley. Okay. Yeah. And what's the vineyard?
Burton.
Burton Vineyard.
Burton Ranch.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So it's up there in sort of the shadow of Mount St. Helena.
Exactly.
Really an amazing part of Sonoma County, one that a lot of people don't know about and don't see, and I think that's a good thing. You know, we don't need a lot of visitors, though. It's such a pristine place.
Yeah, it's really red soil there, really rich, and the ripening time is a long, very long ripening. It gets kind of cool in the evenings, very warm during the day, so the Sangiovese isn't picked till like the 10th or 12th of October.
This is, oh, this is a nice, really nice, very smooth, very pretty.
Yeah, it's a great food wine. Uh-huh. It's one of those wines that you either like Sangiovese or you don't. I happen to love it myself. Uh-huh. It's one of my favorite wines, and we have gotten a pretty good following on it.
Mm-hmm. Is there, and what's it retail for?
I think this is about
$30. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay, let's see. Randy, why don't we talk about what Harvest Moon Winery is doing?
Sure, yeah. Harvest Moon, we're a small little family boutique winery. Not sure if I like that word boutique anymore. But we do a couple thousand cases a year. My folks moved out to Olivet Road, where the winery is located, back in the 70s. And we actually sold our fruit to a local winery, Deloche, for 30 years. Mm-hmm. And in 2001, I was able to convince my father through somewhat hostile negotiations. I have an accounting background, and here's his kid with an accounting degree wanting to keep his fruit that he's been, you know, manicuring for 30 years and make wine with it. But I was able to convince him, and our first commercial vintage was 2002 with our flagship, the Pitts Home Ranch, which is our estate zin, which is pretty much what we do. We do flirt with a little Pinot and some bone-dry Gewurztraminers, but we do zin.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly focusing on what we call the elegant side of Zinfandel.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the name.
Harvest Moon. Coming from an Irish Italian background, we were drinking some wine one night, and this is back in 2000. We were trying to figure out what we were going to call ourselves, and we kind of splintered off into a couple different groups. And it was the night that the moon came up through the trees.
Oh, perfect.
And I was in the Harvest Moon side. It was actually my mom's idea. We had figured, though, Harvest Moon, I'm sure, you know, we figured one of the big guys had splintered off Harvest Moon and
threw
some money
out
of trademark. And yeah, we actually checked the legal status of it, and it was available. So we very quietly, trademarked and reserved the name. And
good
voila.
For you.
Yeah,
when I saw that, it's like, wow, Harvest Moon Winery is a boutique winery. That is so cool.
Right. And we're not a large winery yet.
Uh-huh.
Spinoff.
Uh-huh.
So,
And what's current? What's on the market right now?
We do three different zins.
Mm-hmm.
And a Sonoma County Randy Zin, which is a fun wine, fun colorful label. And then we do a Russian River Valley blend, predominantly 100% Zinfandel from the Russian River Valley. And then we do our single vineyard designate called the Pitts Home Ranch Estate. We also do a bone dry sparkling Gewurztraminer.
Sparkling?
Sparkling Gewurz.
And
wow, this is bone dry stuff. I went to the end of Google one night. I thought there was going to be some sort of congratulations, you win. And my wife looked at me like, get the hell off the computer, because my eyes were glazed over. And anyways, needless to say, there were no other sparkling dry Gewurzes out there. And it was a fun wine that we do each year, about 150 cases mm-hmm. a year of it. And it's definitely screams for, you know, the crab cakes or oysters on a half shell.
Wow, I would love to. I have to try that.
Yeah, it's really nice stuff.
Sounds good.
I mean, I love dry. I love dry Gewurztraminer.
Yeah.
But sparkling never occurred
right.
to me.
It's pretty unique stuff.
Uh huh. And what's sort of the price range of your wines?
I would say, the Randy's Inn's $18 on up to our flagship, which is $32.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to keep, you know, as I say, keep it real, keep it affordable for folks to be able to come out and taste our wines. Most of our wines are around 200 cases per bottling. So, it's enough. I'll never make a killing, but I get to, pay my bills and keep my wife happy.
There you go.
I should really say,
like what you
keep
do.
My wife happy and then pay my bills in order of importance.
And you like what you do.
Love it.
There you go.
Can you tell?
You can sort of see it in you. That's really cool. Okay, Franny, tell us about... Is it a new winery, or is it One World Winery renamed?
Yes, originally it was One World Winery. It started in 1991 on Pagna Road, and in 1998 we bought the present property and developed the winery and renamed it with the help of my wife, Jeanette, renamed it Sunse Winery. And opened a tasting room in January of 2000.
And where is it? It's in Western Santa Rosa.
Yes, it's on Olivet Road, 1839 Olivet Road, between Randy and Deloche.
Yeah, there's actually seven of us on Olivet now, which I think is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's about six or seven wineries on Olivet Road right now.
Called Olivet Wine Road.
Mm-hmm.
And what's your specialty?
Well, I do many different types and varietals as well. Last year I made 20 different lots. I grow Pinot Noir, so my Pinot comes from estate vineyard, and we buy most of all of the other grapes. So I do the Zinfandel, two or three lots of Zinfandel, Syrah, Petit Syrah, Sangiovese, Cabernet, Merlot, Malbec, Meritage. I suppose my Meritage tends to do really well at the competitions. My latest one just won the best of class at San Francisco.
Oh, congratulations.
That's huge.
Chronicle. So I'm very eclectic in this department of winemaking. And I think that's probably a common trait between us who make many different types, because we don't necessarily do it for extrinsic reasons. I think we do it for intrinsic joy and pleasure and passion and love of doing it. And I think the business comes later, which is kind of uncommon phenomena in companies and businesses. They generally have a very strict business plans, and let's do this, and so we can know exactly how much we can sell and make money. But I think some of us winemakers, we have a little different approach. We do it out of our passion and out of our love and heart, and then I think that works. Why I think that works very well because we show our love and engagement in the product. It shows off eventually. It comes through. Our commitment comes through in the product. It's working for Sunce Winery.
Where did you get your start winemaking? Was it in this country? And actually, I should ask you where you're from originally.
Yes, well, I think all of the technical aspects and experience I've done here and again here. Although I was exposed to winemaking during my childhood, my parents and grandparents were making wine every year, so I picked up the basic functions. You mm-hmm. grow the grapes.
And where was that?
In Croatia.
Oh, in Croatia.
I'm
okay.
From the Dalmatian coast on the island of Hvar. Very beautiful place now. Everybody wants to go there. it's very it's amazing spot. So I have acquired those basic functions. So I knew what needs to be done with the grapes and aging and so on, but I actually never done it. I was just observing my parents since mm-hmm. I was a kid and teenager at the time. So after I began to make wine here, that sort of childhood exposure became very evident. Mm-hmm.
Now, was your primary career winemaking, or did you pursue something different before you started?
Yes, right. Well, I came to Sonoma County from San Francisco to complete my PhD program in psychology, to complete a dissertation and research I was at the time doing in Berkeley. And as I was doing that, I began to make wine in the basement, a few barrels this year and a few barrels next year. Pretty soon I had many barrels. So I decided to do something with the wines I made over a number of years, and hence I opened a small winery. Mm-hmm. And I finished a PhD in 1990. Mm-hmm. And I had taught psychology as well for a while, mm-hmm. but both of those interests come out of passion. I love them both, so there is absolutely no conflict between them.
Hey, you are listening to A Mouthful. We'll be right back.
Tonight, the bottle let me down. Too sober. Couldn't drink enough to keep you all.
It's Mouthful. Tonight we're talking with four winemakers, winery owners in Sonoma County. In March, we have Barrel Tasting Month, a really popular event that has grown from one weekend to two weekends and now to the entire month of March. Lots of different opportunities depending on the specific appellation to get to see and experience the really diverse terroir of Sonoma County. It's not uniform, as you know if you live here or have spent any time here. If you're listening far away via the World Wide Web, one of the things to understand about Sonoma County is its geographic diversity and hundreds of microclimates. Somewhere in Sonoma County, and I think I'm going to see if you all agree with me, pretty much any varietal will do well somewhere in Sonoma County. Am I right?
Yeah, I would agree. I think pretty much somewhere every varietal grown right with the right rootstock,
mm-hmm.
right
proper farming techniques.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, it's, you know, one place may be too hot for certain things, another place may be too cold for other things, but it's just so diverse. It's a much harder place to get your arms around and understand in any single way because you can't. Napa is one long valley mm-hmm. with, you know, varying climate as you travel north. It gets hotter and hotter. But Sonoma County is five big valleys and a seacoast. Anyway, on that note, we have heard from, we've heard about Harvest Moon Winery, Sunsay, Ledson. Now we're going to talk about Chalk Hill.
Great.
What year? I know you've been there since, what, 2003?
2003.
Yeah, and when was Chalk Hill founded?
Chalk Hill was founded in 1972. That's the year that Fred Firth, the owner, mm-hmm. First bought a 200-acre parcel on Chalk Hill Road, and since that point it's grown to over 1,400 acres on the estate.
And it's still the only, is it still the only bonded winery in Chalk Hill Appellation?
There's a couple others. There are. We're by far the in terms of acreage available for growing vines, the biggest.
Because for a long time you were the only one.
Right, and it's the only 100% estate winery in the Appalachian.
What are the other ones?
There's Chateau Felice is a neighbor just across the way. And there's other people that, of course, source grapes.
Sure, there's a lot of vineyards, but as far as a winery and a tasting room.
Right. Those are the two, really, that are in the Appalachian.
Yeah. So tell us about what Chalk Hill's doing today.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up diversity in Sonoma County. And I'm from Napa, third generation Napan, and I worked over at Robert Mondavi Winery for 11 years before coming over to Chalk Hill. And one of the biggest reasons for coming to Sonoma was the diversity. And in many regards, there's diversity of people that I didn't see mm-hmm. in Napa, but in terms of viticultural opportunities, huge diversity. And then specifically at Chalk Hill Chalk Hill Estate, there's a great diversity there as well. We do multiple varieties on the estate. As I'd mentioned, it's 1,400 acres, and it's 100% estate grown, which is fantastic as a winemaker to have that ability to source grapes that are controlled 100% by your own team, to have the opportunity to make very difficult decisions. And as an example, thinning decisions, we really keep our yields extremely low so that we can craft wines that are world-class. You know,
So then when you say for the novice, when you say thinning and yields low, explain what
that
means, because I think that's I find it really interesting.
Definitely. Thinning is just an operation that you do in the vineyard where you go through and you take a crew through and you drop fruit on the ground. You have basically pruning shears or some other tool to cut off clusters, and what your goal is to have the remaining clusters be perfectly situated to ripen evenly and to gain concentration. Many wineries outside of Sonoma and the Central Valley of California comes to mind are farming vineyards to very extreme yields because of their bottom line driven, and their margins are so low, it's not atypical to find vineyards that might carry 10 tons per acre.
And that's how it was done in the early years in Sonoma County. I always remember the story that Joe Rocchioli would like to tell about how, and Joe there, of course, in that wonderful area of West Side Road, and all his neighbors, I think this was in the 60s, were planting Beaujolais, Gamay, and getting, you know, 10, 12, 16 tons per acre. And I've never been able to figure out if it was vision or just perversity that made him put in Pinot Noir and get between 1 and 3 tons per acre instead of, you know, these high yields.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he certainly was one of the people to start making the most beautiful wines that Sonoma County saw at that time. So dropping yield improves the quality, in a nutshell, just improves the quality
right,
of the fruit.
It improves the quality of the fruit. It does multiple things, but I think the most important are you allow the remaining fruit to become more concentrated. So the energy of the vine is focused in far fewer clusters because you've dropped a lot of them on the ground. So the remaining ones are able to get all that energy for producing flavors and texture and very ripe tannins for red wines. All those elements are critical. Also, oh, someone has a call. Also, each cluster ideally would be situated where it's not stacked up against another cluster, so it can get some amount of sunlight penetration, which helps to evolve tannins for red grapes and flavors for basically all varieties. So it's a meticulous, very difficult decision to go through vineyards and drop significant crop, but if your goal is to make great wines, it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Nick, is it possible to say what Chalk Hill is best known for?
Absolutely. We're renowned for great Chardonnay. I think in the 90s especially, we were producing some of the very best Chardonnays in all of California, and we've continued that tradition. We do have several other varieties that we produce, and when I was interviewing for the job with Fred and Peggy Firth, the owners, we were very clear in terms of having a shared vision of making Chalk Hill renowned for great red wines as well. World class, we want to make the very best. So we've done many things in the vineyard and in the winery to make that happen. First and foremost, it takes a great commitment on part of the owners and all the people on the team to make those hard decisions, like the thinning of the fruit or pulling out vineyards that are underperforming and don't meet certain quality standards. And also, it's been fortunate for me. It's been great working on this estate and having that commitment to bring in new equipment, gentle handling of the fruit. And we actually, with the barrel tasting month, we'll be showcasing our new red wine aging facility, a new facility that just ages red barrels, and that's where we'll have the barrel tasting. It's fantastic.
Now, when you talk about Chalk Hill and red wine, I think Cabernet. Is that still the emphasis?
That is part of the lineup, definitely. Mm-hmm. We have Cabernet. We also bottle a Merlot. Mm-hmm. And starting in 2006, last year we picked our first Syrah from the vineyard. When I first came in 2003, we started planting Syrah, and it's phenomenal. I think it's going to be a big hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think at Chalk Hill, there's so many different soil types, and it's in the hills of the Appalachian, so we can go through and really, with a fine-tooth comb, figure out exactly where on the estate to plant what specific varieties and, you know, the root stocks that they'll be planted on, so it's a perfect match. As I mentioned, there's 1,400 acres, but about 300 planted to vines. So it's a slow process of finding out where those perfect locations are. And then we've been every year maybe 5 to 8 acres of development of red varieties. So it's a slow progression, but we want to make sure we do it right.
Mm-hmm. Now, I remember one of the last times I was at Chalk Hill, and it was a while ago, I remember the winemaker talking about wild yeast. And if I'm recalling correctly, it was all wild yeast used in the Chardonnay fermentation.
That's right.
Is that still the case?
That's still the case. And that was David Ramey really introduced that in the early 90s, a famous Sonoma County winemaker. He has his own brand now, so
yeah,
quite well.
Uh-huh.
And I know David. He was integral in bringing me to the estate. He was part of that recruitment process. But he started that tradition at Chalk Hill, and we've continued that along. And I've expanded that beyond just Chardonnay. And when you say wild yeast, it's really where you do not add any commercially available yeast. You just let what comes in from the vineyards and what might be in your winery to slowly begin the fermentation process.
So yeast occurs naturally.
It does.
On the fruit.
You know, way back centuries ago, they didn't know what commercial yeast were. It
right.
just happened naturally. So yeah. It's kind of going back to the traditional ways of making wine.
And so you're doing that with the reds now?
We're doing that with the reds as well.
Uh-huh.
And
what are the different challenges? I know, or I assume, that when you're adding yeast, you're choosing whatever commercial yeast that you think is right for your location and your grapes. That's one path to go. But when you're doing wild yeast, does that present different challenges, unique challenges?
Absolutely. It's, as a winemaker, being committed to doing native fermentation or wild yeast fermentations, it makes it very difficult to sleep at night during that process. What you're doing is allowing just the juice to begin the fermentation, because there's a very minute population of the wild yeast that came from the vineyard or is in your cellar. And what happens is it might take up to 14 days before you see the onset of fermentation, whereas if you added commercial strains, it might take 1 or 2 days. Also, the wild yeast, there might be dozens of different subspecies competing against each other. That's part of what makes it so great, because each one brings a little bit of nuance to the ultimate wine. Mm-hmm. However, you don't have a very strong population, and it might take a very long time to finish your fermentation. And because of that, your wine during that period, unless you're very careful and meticulous, can be put at some degree of risk. But I personally feel the payoff is worth that risk, so long as you're diligent in doing your job and monitoring these lots every day.
Yeah. Definitely have a much greater control with the synthetic product.
Mm-hmm.
And its process is finished much quicker. I made a late harvest Zinfandel last year with natural yeast, and it was finished fermenting the following year in June. So it was like 6, 7, 8 months, and it was still
really.
So it's much because it became dormant in the winter. It was too cold, and there was not sufficient yeast bacteria in the wine to continue fermenting during that period. So when the weather warmed up in spring, it started to go up again.
The barrels start to crackle.
Much more unpredictable. You have much less controls, and it's much longer period, or it takes much longer time to finish there.
Mm-hmm. You have to taste every day. You have to monitor all the
emphasis
chemical
on
analyses.
Have to taste every day.
you ought to. Well, you feel compelled to taste every day. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not a great burden to taste wine every day or fermenting juice. And another element of native fermentation, of this wild yeast concept, is that because it takes such a long period to finish the fermentation, that presence of the yeast with the fermenting juice helps to soften the wine as well. There's elements, physical elements of the yeast that help to bind out phenolics. They're kind of the harsh, bitter components that could be in your juice, and having that long, protracted, slow fermentation helps to soften the wine because it removes those elements. And also, it tends to leave you with a wine that has just a tiny amount of natural sugar, not to a point where it's real perceptible or obvious and cloying, but it brings a little more richness to the wine. So all those elements, I think, really incrementally add small amounts of quality, but it is at some amount of risk.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that you want to have your alcohols finishing relatively low?
Well, certainly, because the native yeast aren't nearly as strong as these commercial strains, it makes your decision as to when to pick more interesting, because if you really are pushing the level of maturity to very high sugar contents, it's going to make it more difficult for those native yeast to finish fermentation. So certainly we're not going to extreme levels of maturity.
That's good news.
Yeah, I think, you know, doing a wild yeast fermentation and taking that extended time that it does take, it kind of relate that to making a stew. If you think about it, if you cooked a stew really fast as opposed to something just slow, how much more flavor and richness comes to it. Mm-hmm. We do pretty much all wild yeast fermentations as well now, and I agree that they're, you just get so much body and consistency. The flavors are bigger, bolder, softer, less tannin.
The slower, cooler fermentations tend to preserve this kind of the freshness. There's a juiciness to fermentations that hit, you know, 82 degrees versus 90 or 95 degree Fahrenheit. The wines taste fresher, and they're just as dry, but they just taste, I like this word, yummy.
Yummy is such a good word. It's one of my favorite words, actually.
I use it
all the time. Okay, one last question. Sure. What's the price range for Chalk Hill wines?
Well, we have Sauvignon Blanc that's priced in the mid-20s, and then our Cabernet is, I believe, $55 retail price point. Mm-hmm.
And I think, Franny, I forgot to ask you your price range.
It's from 20 to 50 as well.
20 to 50, okay. So we're all sort of in relative, you know, parameters. Now I'm curious, I want you all to think beyond your own wineries, and let's talk about the state of winemaking in Sonoma County and sort of the arc that you've seen since you've been either making wine or just drinking it here. And I know you said you had an interesting observation, Randy.
Yeah, I spend a lot of time at the PRMD. Anybody that's in the county knows about the Permit Resource Management Department. It's a lovely place. I'd recommend visiting often as possible. But one of the permit specialists told me that at any given time, there are 6 to 8 permits, winery permits, in process. And that includes ones that have just been submitted or ones that are ready for a final sign-off. I know we have well over, I think, 400 wineries in Sonoma County alone, and it's increasing, not exponentially, but it's definitely increasing. And
well, it was under 200, certainly in 1990, when I wrote the first edition of A Cook's Tour of Sonoma. It was, I think it was 170-something. Then in 2000, I know it was like 270-something.
Well, there's a lot of these farmers who, like us, you know, we had our vineyards for 28 years, and the price of land goes up, and you sell your fruit for, you know, and grow your fruit for 30 years, and you go, gosh, you know, we can do this, and, you know, we'll do a little refinancing and take this old chicken coop and convert it into a winery. And there's a lot of, end-all goal is diversification of the fruit. You know, what used to be one winery would take a 28-acre piece of land, it's now being divvied up amongst 4 or 5 small wineries. Mm-hmm. And each winemaker has their own influence, and each wine, although it comes from the same vineyard, picked pretty much around the same time, you're going to see nuances that basically people are going to be able to fine-tune or dial in their own palate based on just the sheer number of wineries that are out there now.
Mm-hmm. I think the reason, one of the reasons that this awareness and focus on wine is being developed in the last decades or so, is that in early 90s there was many write-ups and research done on the various benefits to wine. You all remember the French paradox.
The French paradox, yes.
And then psychological and cardiovascular research indicating that a small amount of wine is good for your heart, for your health, for your blood, for your stress reduction, for psychosomatic problems and so. So, I mean, all in terms of Mediterranean diet, in terms of moderation. So this this has dramatically increased awareness of the wine in the United States, which for us it's a primary market, and hence the quality and the emphasis was attached to quality. Began to, you know, so things have begun to change from quantity to quality. Zinfandel became very popular. In the 80s, Zinfandel was, and anybody makes Zinfandel in their basement. So, and farming became more, more developed. The research has been done in significant research, particularly in Australia and South Africa as well, on farming and cloning and of grapes. So the push has been moved toward the quality. Mm. And and we know that here in Sonoma County there are so many wineries, the competition, of course, it's very evident. So we have to focus on quality of grapes.
I think that's a great point. I think what's interesting about this business, and especially as I see it in Sonoma County, is, as you had touched on, Randy, and you just had mentioned as well, there's this proliferation of wineries, and it builds competition, but it's unique in that it's very friendly. competition, mm-hmm. and we're all in it together, and we're learning from each other. And I think it's a great thing, mainly for quality for Sonoma County wines, by having these different players involved,
exactly.
especially
right.
these growers that have been growing grapes for these wineries for so many years, and they have something very specific and very special in their vineyard, and now they're making smaller amounts of wine and having that kept separate and offered to the public. I think it's a great thing for Sonoma County
it's
and quality
good,
overall.
I think the next best thing that can happen for Sonoma County is growers be paid by the acre. It's a concept that some people are doing now. Growers are still being paid by the pound. So is it in the grower's interest to thin the fruit, which Steve was talking about, the quality over Chalk Hill? There's a correlation there. It's not rocket science. The fewer pounds per vine you pull off, the more intense the fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And the day that wineries can come in and pay the growers by the acre, look, don't worry about how many pounds you're going to be pulling off of it. We're going to pay you X amount per acre, and you do what we'd like to do to the fruit for quality. When
is there
that
any
happens,
trend towards that?
Well, it's there's I would I don't know I wouldn't put one
yeah,
percentage
small,
on it.
Certain small percentage. It's uh-huh. based yeah. on that contract.
I
see that happen with growers. Definitely wanting to, you know, sell their fruit by the acre,
mm-hmm.
because if you have a frost or, you know, bad winter and not a good set, all kinds of things go wrong, and you're paying by the acre, the winery's not going to do too good. And that's been one of the reasons that some of the wineries have had a hard time going to that.
Sure.
Our family started making wines here in 1862.
You
we
did?
Had a ranch up in it was Brooks Road then,
uh-huh.
and 160 acres, and they produced.
What is it now, Brooks?
It's Arata Lane now.
Oh,
it was
okay,
Brooks
yeah.
Road. And in 1862, they made 8,000 gallons of Zinfandel.
Uh-huh.
So that was my great-great-grandfather. So I've seen some unbelievable changes as a kid growing up. I was making wine with my father when I was 5 years old, you know,
really?
Down the basement.
Uh-huh.
So I've seen a lot of changes, and I think uh-huh. that, you know, listening to Randy talk about having a state winery and talking about the thinning of the fruit, and I've seen some huge changes in farming practices, you know, just from the old head-pruned vines to planting vines closer together, more vines per acre, all kinds of different trellis systems. Randy was talking about the thinning process, and that thinning process doesn't just remove crop and give you more concentration, but you also want to remove and you want to get a balance between the canopy, you know, all the shoots and the leaves, and your fruit. If
mm-hmm.
you have too much canopy, you can get kind of a veggie wine. If you don't have enough canopy, you don't get quite the ripeness. So that thinning process is a real technical process. You're going
yes.
through trying to balance the canopy, try to leave your clusters open so air will get through so you don't get mildew or botrytis mm-hmm. through the grapes.
That means you spray less chemicals because you've got, you know, there's less mildew pressure.
Yeah, the less chemicals, if you really, you know, balance your vineyard well. And so having an estate winery like Chalk Hill does, they can really work hard and they can make their own decisions. They're making it for the wine. And I know ourselves and all the fruit that we grow, it's the same thing. We can make that decision. We're not worrying about, geez, I'm not going to make any money on this crop.
Mm-hmm.
And luckily, because of my family, you know, a lot of the people we buy fruit from will follow that practice. So my dad told me as a young kid, he says, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
Right.
So really, in winemaking, from my vision, I think that 95% of the quality in a bottle of wine comes in the vineyard.
In the vineyard.
It's funny.
Right.
You don't get good grapes.
Mm-hmm.
You're
Michelle,
not
you
anywhere.
Have four winemakers here, and you see we get all excited about the growing of the fruit. I
mm-hmm.
mean, that's this industry's core competency. And, you know, not to...
it's all about the fruit.
Right.
It's
I mean,
all about
it really
the fruit.
Is all about
yeah.
the fruit.
And I know this.
It has to be about the ingredients.
Yes, about the ingredients.
And there's all kinds of metaphors you can describe, you know, about the quality of a raw ingredient. One of the things I think is just very, very unique about the wine industry is very few industries produce the raw material that they then turn into a final product. You know, we grow the fruit and then turn that into a final product.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like us growing, you know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know,
this
growing
cotton and
yes,
then making
yeah.
our own shirt.
This
growing
is
the linen to make
this is a perfect metaphor.
Yeah.
Right.
Perfect metaphor for alchemy. But I noticed that a lot of growers are really interested in the quality of the wine that's coming out of their vineyard, of their grapes. And they are really, to my experience, they are very willing to cooperate and work with the winemaker to cut down the crop to they're proud.
Mm-hmm.
of what's coming out of the vineyard, and they want to continue selling the grapes and have a contract. So I think we are more or less on the
especially
same
like
page.
Especially like you have a lot of vineyard designates. Yeah. And you put your name, you know, you put their name on
I
it.
Put
so
their name
obviously
on
it's yeah, in
so
their
and
interest.
They really care. I think vineyard designates has been one of the great things to happen in winemaking. And you know what? We're going to be running out of time really soon. So for our last few minutes, I got a couple specific questions. And if you've been listening to Mouthful for a while, you probably have your pen or pencil in hand because we're going to give you websites and such. For barrel tasting, is there a single web? What's the single website that will give people information?
Well, there's a couple of them. Wineroad.com.
Wineroad.com will list all the wineries participating in Northern Sonoma, mm-hmm. Dry Creek, Russian River, and Alexander Valley, which is approximately 100 to 120 wineries. Mm-hmm. And also, each winery will list what their expectations and their demand, you know, mm-hmm. needs and so on.
Okay, so wineroad.com.
Parking, yeah.
Yeah, and in the Sonoma Valley, you can either go to www.heartofsonomavalley.com to get your tickets.
Heartofsonomavalley.com.
Or you can call 866-794-WINE.
That's 866-794-WINE.
WINE, and purchase your tickets.
Okay, very good. And let's see, what do we have here?
And there's some information about the Barrel Tasting Month at www.sc, as in Sonoma County, barreltasting.com. It's a good source of information.
Barreltasting.com. So that's for information about the month of March barrel tasting in Sonoma County. Now, for Chalk Hill, Chalk Hill's website is?
It is www.chalkhill.com. Easy.
Chalkhill.com. There you go. Okay, and Ledson?
And Ledson is www.ledson.com.
And for Sunce is www.sunsewinery.com.
Mine's, I guess, easy too, harvestmoonwinery.com.
Okay, one last question for each of you. Start with you. What's your favorite wine to drink? Do you have one?
I have many. It's very hard
to just pick
one. But I really love Cabernet Sauvignon.
Okay.
And from all over the world, especially Chalk Hill, Cabernet Sauvignon, of course. But
just like when nobody's looking and you're going to grab something to open and sit back.
And Sauvignon Blanc as well. I've been on a craze with Sauvignon Blanc last year or so.
I have been too. Steve Letson, is it Sangiovese?
No, actually, I love Sauvignon Blanc. That's one of my favorite wines. But I think if I'm going to sit down and have a meal, I'm going to have a Meritage. We make one called Ti Amo, and it means I love you. And it's an incredible bottle of wine.
I love you in a glass. That's
great.
That's really great. Okay, Franny.
For me, it's very difficult. I change, but I suppose right now I do enjoy Pinot Noir.
Me too.
Mine's easy. Zinfandel. Baby.
Okay. Well, I know it's a Sunday night, and you guys are usually kicking back, relaxing, and having dinner. So I really appreciate you taking the time to come on down to Mouthful.
Great. Cheers.
And maybe I'll see you during barrel tasting. Here we go.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and thanks to you too for joining us. Meet me back here next week for another episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour, here on KRCB.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes. Support for Mouthful comes from KRCB Radio members and from JAG Public Relations, providing comprehensive marketing for the hospitality industry with an emphasis on wine, food, and beverages. JAG Public Relations will manage your web content and provide your graphic and still photography needs. More information at 707-795-9400 or at jagpublicrelations.com. We also have support from River Rock Casino, Sonoma County's 24-hour entertainment destination, just off Highway 128 on the Dry Creek Rancheria in Geyserville. It's time for dinner, now let's go. We got some beans and some good cornbread. Now listen to what the...
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the all-new MDX with available real-time traffic monitoring. More information at Acura.com.